This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, my name's Kaylee. I'm from Glasgow. I decided to join the community, and I can honestly say it is the best gift I've ever given to myself. The support you get from Shaz, Ben, and the community members is second to none. The forums are great. We cover a lot of topics in there, and we have a laugh, but ultimately we're there to support each other. Being able to access the forums via the app on the go is so helpful. If you're out and about and you have a wobble or you're having a bad day, there's always someone there in the forum who has felt like you feel and can offer some support and advice. The game changer for me has definitely been the Zooms. I still remember how nervous I was joining that first Zoom, but within 5 minutes, I would feel at ease. I absolutely love them and look forward to them now. Everyone on there is so lovely. There's no judgment at all. Everyone's got a different experience and different drinking habits, but we all have so much in common. I would urge anyone who's listened to this podcast who wants to take a break from alcohol to give it a go.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. We are the world's allegedly biggest alcohol-free podcast. We have had 100,000. Actually, we've not had 100,000. I think we've had about 116,000, something like that. Basically shitloads of downloads. So thank you so much if you are joining us for the first time. I'll tell you about myself in just a moment because I'm very excited as well about introducing our guest. Ben, let's start with you. Come from the background, come forth.
Little old me. This is weird.
Little old you.
I produce this podcast. I started off producing this podcast as a beer drinker and a whiskey drinker and a wine drinker and a tequila drinker.
Okay.
But I'm now 15 months alcohol free. I love alcohol free life. I am brighter. I am lighter. I'm more present. I've got better focus. I'm more motivated. I'm consistent for the first time properly in my life. And I love being alcohol-free and talking to Freddie and Shaz every week. So
I love that.
This is weird. Sorry, it just threw me there.
Yeah. Well, deal with it. And that little intro there is just reminding me of those lads from Burnley called Chumbawamba and that song. He likes a whiskey drink. He likes a lager drink. He likes it.
That was me. Yeah.
You were Chumbawamba. Ben, thank you so much. We have got Freddie, co-host of this fine pod. He is in the future. He is in New Zealand. Morning, love.
Good morning, love. And to carry on the theme, I get knocked down, but I get back up again. You're never going to keep me down. Hello, everybody. My name is Freddie. I am from the UK, but I'm here in the future in New Zealand. I used to be an everything drinker, but then I decided to be an everything liver. Doesn't quite work as well. But I used to be heavy drinking, heavy partying. But then I decided to change my behaviours, see what life was all about. And now I'm coming up to 1,000 days alcohol-free.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And finally, my name is Sharon Hartley. I am in Lancashire. I'm in the northwest of England. And like Freddie and Ben, I used to like a whiskey drink and a lager drink and the songs that reminded me of the good times and all the rest of it. I never actually did like lager or whiskey. I was more rosé by the vat and vodka Red Bull, because it would be rude to open two bottles of wine on a school night, so I used to go for the spirits. Long story short, I stopped drinking over 3 years ago. I've stopped counting days. I am just embracing alcohol-free life and singing about sobriety, and it is just, it's fantastic. It's really good in alcohol-free life. Brilliant, et cetera, et cetera. Enough about us. You know who we are now. Thank you so much for listening. I don't know where to start. I don't know how to introduce our guest this evening because I've been dying to chat to her for a long time. We've finally pinned down a date, which is today, which is fabulous. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Irene Wignall. A very good evening to you, Irene.
Hi, everybody. Thank you.
Evening. Now, I'm just going to read this. This is your bio off Instagram. I love the first line. It says, look for the effing rainbows, which we are going to talk about in just a moment. I am a mum of boys, an amazing wife. I'm an author. I love procrastinating. And I'm a detective in my day job. Irene, where do we start?
Sounds impressive, doesn't it?
It really, really does. Welcome to Over the Influence.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're more than welcome. So just introduce yourself. Just fill in those gaps for us. Like I said, where to start? Who are you? What do you do?
Well, I'm near Lancashire. I'm Bolton, which used to be Lancashire. So I'm great in Manchester.
I love the accent. Great accent.
And like you said, I'm a detective by day. So that's my day job. I've been in the police 23 years. Mum of boys, who I call the Stinks. Never expected to have boys. I always imagined to have girls. And it was a bit of a shock having boys. So, yeah, I call them the Stinks. Married to Adam. He's a policeman as well, which is quite typical. And I've been sober coming up to 3 years on 31st of December.
Oh, that's brilliant. Really, amazing. Really well done.
And it was, I remember seeing you on social media right at the beginning of my sober sort of journey.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
God.
And you had a phrase, which you said quite a lot.
You can repeat it, Irene, it's fine.
So it would, don't be a dick. And I loved watching your journey. And I remember you were running and I thought, if I give up drink, I'll be able to run. I'll be eventually a runner. And that's not happened.
Yeah, well, you and me both, Irene. I mean, the booze isn't there, but the running never came. We can talk to Freddie all about that. That is, it's really, really funny. Well, it's loads to chat about tonight. So thank you so much. Fellow Northerner, it's great to have you here to balance out with these two, Freddie and Ben. So you are coming up to 3 years alcohol-free. Take us back to before that time, Irene, and just tell us a bit about you as a drinker, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I started off quite normal. So a couple of drinks on a Friday night. And that was fine. If it could have stayed at that, that would be fine. Then I joined the police at 23. And it was I was in uniform in the city centre of Manchester. And we had a young shift and we partied hard and we worked hard. And yeah, our nights out tend to be midweek because that were our days off. And I remember when I dealt with drunks at the weekend, especially drunk women, I were like, oh my God, I can't stand drunk women. But I was that drunk woman on like a Tuesday or Wednesday when it were my days off. But I never associated the two together. I never put the two together. I couldn't see the similarities. And I knew I were a big drinker. And I was always like the drunkest of the group of people that were out. But it was like, it was fun the next day saying like, oh my God, what did I do? Who did I kiss? And it was like, it went like that for many years. And then I met my husband, who's not particularly a big drinker, but I carried on. We had our first son, Ted, in 2012, and then we were pregnant again in 2013, and we lost our second son, Dusty. He was stillborn on the 8th of November. And I remember thinking at the time, I can't go under. I've got a 14-month-old here. I can't go under. So I started to write, but I continued to drink. And my drink sort of, the alcohol took on a different, I don't know, purpose then, I suppose. And it was getting me through the grief, or so I thought. But what I didn't realise until I gave up drinking was it delayed the grief. I wasn't getting through it. I was just numbing the feeling. We got pregnant again. We had another little boy, Albie. And life was good, but I was still drinking. And I think at this stage, I was also sort of Googling how many units should I have? Am I an alcoholic? You know, and I had young kids and I thought, it doesn't feel right. I was doing everything that I was supposed to be doing. I was working, I was going to the gym, we were going out on weekends, but I was doing it all like in a haze. I never felt 100%. Then I got diagnosed with a brain tumour and I thought, right, okay, it's now or never. If I'm going to give up, it's got to be now. And I had brain surgery in March 2019 the December 2018, I thought, right, I knew I was having brain surgery in the March and I thought, I don't want them to open up my skull and my brain be pickled in vodka and it not and not give myself the best chance I could have. So I'd done a load of reading beforehand, and then I knew on the 31st of December that that was going to be my last drink. Adam was at work, my husband was at work. I didn't tell anyone. So for about 2 weeks, I just kept it to myself. And I think I'd sort of done all the preparation beforehand. I'd read all the books, I'd followed people on Instagram, like on social media. And it wasn't as hard as I thought it would be. And once I started telling people, right, I've got to a month now and I've got to 2 months and it just continued. But I needed, you know, I needed goals all the time. I needed sort of accountability goals to get to that one, and then I'd get to the next one. And now I'm like nearly 3 years. I don't need that anymore. I don't need the accountability. I don't need the goal. But yeah, in a nutshell, that's it really.
Wow.
What a story. And it sounds, I mean, yeah, there's so many different directions we could go, Irene, but I imagine in those early days that you were mentioning, I know a few people in the police force in Cheshire, and yeah, they met in the police and everything as well. And they always tell a story of a very close-knit, you know, work hard, play hard group. And I wanted to delve a bit deeper to see what it was like, because we all know what an English or British city centre's like at 11 o'clock on a Saturday night. And what was that like, being out there sober, and then secondly, dealing with these people? Because I guess you must have seen all sorts of things, and dealing with that and then sort of doing it on you know, drinking yourself as well.
Yeah, it was horrendous dealing with drunks on a Friday and Saturday night. And I couldn't wait till like 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, and the city would be deserted. And then we went to 24-hour drinking, didn't we? So it was never really deserted. It was just, like I said, the women that I dealt with personally, you know, that I saw were the worst drunks. And there was no rationalising with them. There was no trying to talk sense. But then I would be that person then when I was out. And I couldn't see that the two, you know, it never occurred to me that I was that person until I became sober. And I thought, oh, my God, I would have been, you know, screaming and shouting and just being a pain in the ass, basically. I would have been that person. But yeah, and it's funny because in the police you see, like you see all your detective programmes, and when they've had a hard day at work or any day at work, they come home and they open a bottle of wine, and you see that on every police programme. But it is sort of done. And I know people who've had cans of beer when they finish nights, you know, to get to sleep. And that's not normal, that's not right. But yeah, it is a big drinking culture,
I'm sure. And I imagine, as you say, you're a detective now, the stress of your job and the things you must be involved with and see must be, is that temptation still there now to de-stress and have a drink, or do you manage to de-stress in other ways?
No, it definitely isn't there anymore, just because I think if I had a drink, it would be 10 times, you know, the problem would still be there the next day, the job would still be there, you'd still be dealing with that same job, but you would be rough as well. So factor that in, it's just going to be 10 times worse. So I meditate. I never thought I would meditate. I meditate every night. And I suppose sit with it, you know, if I have a bad day, it's like, right, okay, go through what was bad about the day, and sit with your feelings. I know it sounds a bit cheesy, that, but feel it so you can sort of go through it.
No, I totally agree. I think it's being sober, it does it emphasizes all the feelings, all the good and all the bad, but I think you have to have that balance, don't you? Otherwise it's, you know, that's what life is about, having the taking the rough with the smooth.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the phrase, that look for the effing rainbows. Life isn't all roses. So when the sort of shit hits the fan, just try and pick out the positives, but deal with the rubbish that you'd been dealt with at the time.
Irene, we won't talk about your day job all the way through this podcast, but just whilst we're on it, It's very rare that we talk to someone so serious as you. And we're all sitting up a bit straighter than we usually
would. Yeah, behave yourself, boys, for God's sake.
A detective on the call. But I suppose from your perspective, from the perspective of a police detective, obviously you've, as you've been talking about, you've risen through the ranks, you've seen it on the street, but you've also seen the impact that alcohol has in other areas of society. How big of a problem is alcohol in our society in the UK in terms of crime, drink driving, domestic abuse, vandalism, theft, fights in the city centre? You know, how big of a problem does the UK have with this bloody thing that you can buy anywhere as long as you're 18?
Well, I think probably a really high percentage of all those crimes that you've mentioned stem from alcohol. The majority, if they've gone on to drugs or whatever, it all stems back, you know, from alcohol. And it's very rare there's crimes like that that just occur because, you know, without alcohol or without any outside sort of stimulant. So I think alcohol is massive in respect of crime.
And as well, Irene, as Ben's just listed there, you've seen the other side of it as well. You've seen, I mean, it's male and female, but talking about females being drunk out in a city centre at 11 o'clock or whatever time on a Friday, Saturday night, the vulnerability that comes with that is terrifying. I've, you know, been out like that. I've got a daughter out now who's started uni life in a city centre, and I think, dear God, and it's quite frightening. And you must have seen people in such vulnerable situations.
Yeah, and I can now see the situations that I put myself in as well, how vulnerable I was at times.
And you're a sensible, mature, grown-up woman.
Yeah, and that's it. I like to think I've got my head on my shoulders.
Yeah, same.
And the situations that I put myself in, and I, you know, if I went into a club now, and I very rarely go into a club because it's just, there's nothing there for me, I can feel anxious because I can see all that's going on around me, and you can see the people that are vulnerable, and you can see the handbags left on the table, and you can see the sort of stalkers out to sort of prance, whatever the word is.
Pounce,
yeah, that's the word. I'm thinking of reindeers.
That's a nicer place to be, I think. It's nice to think of reindeers, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
But yeah, you can see all this when you're sober and you think, wow, it's just scary. It's scary.
And is it getting worse, do you think? I mean, because I haven't been obviously drunk in a town centre for a long time now. Do you think, I mean, alcohol-free is a growing movement, the sober movement is getting bigger. Do you think in town centres, the drinking culture, is it as bad as it was? Is it getting worse?
I think there's a two definite sort of, there's a split. I think there's people who go out to get drunk, and there is always going to be that element that people go out to get drunk, and they're the ones that are in the vulnerable sort of position. But then I think there's a huge amount of younger people now who are more savvy and don't go out to get drunk. So I think there is a movement. And like you say, there's a lot of people now who are sober curious. There's a lot of people who are deciding to go sober. Not a massive amount, but it is increasing. So I think it's definitely changing. There is definitely change afoot, sort of thing.
Do you mind at all if I ask you a little bit about Dusty as a woman, as a parent? I can't imagine what you've been through, and it's really sad to hear, and we're so sorry to hear that. What impact did that have on you and your drinking?
It just completely changed my relationship with alcohol. I would drink prior to Dusty to have a good time. And after Dusty, it would be just to numb the feelings. I wouldn't want to go out to drink particularly. And that's when it changed. And my husband, he wouldn't drink in the house, but I would. And I wouldn't have I never had any issues with him not drinking and I'm drinking. Because if he ever pulled me up on it, I'd be like, right, okay, instead of one bottle, I'll have two. You know, just because that's the way I am. But yeah, it definitely changed my relationship with alcohol into more of a crux, a coping mechanism. But I didn't realise that it was just hindering me, and it was delaying the grieving process. And that's when I started writing. And it wasn't until I'd actually give up that I, because I wrote all about Dusty after I'd given up. And I think writing all about him, that's when I started sort of getting through it. It was like therapy without the cost. And it was only when I'd sort of cleared my head of the alcohol that I could sort of sort myself out with the grief.
And how long after the trauma of a stillbirth was it before you stopped drinking, removed alcohol, and then were able to deal with your grief properly?
It was 5 years. So wow. It's still a long time. And I remember, because it was 2 years after Dusty had been born, that I got diagnosed with a brain tumour. And that was yet another reason why I could drink. You know, like, who's going to tell me now not to have a drink? Because I've got a brain tumour, so nobody's going to tell me not to have a drink. And I remember the day we came home from the consultant, and my mum and dad had my two sons, and we'd arranged to go out for tea that night. And I said, right, we went home and I told them that I had the brain tumour. And I said, we'll still go out for tea. It doesn't matter. Let's just go out as a family. We'll go out for tea. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, I've got no appetite. Now, that never happens to me, ever, which I thought was amazing. And it was the positive in such a rubbishy situation. But I must have drank 4 glasses of wine. And I remember thinking, nobody's gonna judge me now for having a drink. So that's when I carried it. But then when I knew the tumour was growing and I was going to have brain surgery, and I thought, I'm just being an idiot here. I'm not going to give myself the best chance if I carry on drinking the way I'm drinking. So that's when I decided, that's it.
With that decision to stop drinking, and I wanted to touch on what you said at the start about you did a lot of the preparation, and I thought that was really interesting, because the stereotypical or the cliche of when we stop drinking hopefully for the last time, and it's difficult and it's hard and it's a struggle and all these things, but it sounds like you were so good with the preparation that you made it a lot easier when you made that decision. And if you could explain a bit more what all that preparation involved.
Yeah, like I'd done Dry January before, but my birthday is the 1st of February. So the 1st of February, I would have a massive blowout, you know, and it sort of, that was like, oh, well, I've done Dry January, so I can have a massive blowout. And don't get me wrong, the Dry Januarys I thought were hard, but I knew I were going to have the blowout so I could get to that 1st of February. And so the preparation for this sort of, the one time I were like, I think it's like once you admit it to yourself, you want to give up for good. Once that thought is out there and you start, I read Annie Grace's Naked Mind. I read loads of things. And I remember reading Annie Grace's book was the first one I'd read. And I remember seeing the 3 o'clock thing, waking up at 3 o'clock with anxiety and thinking, I'm not going to drink again. And I thought, oh, my God, that's the thing. You know, I thought it was just me. But there were so many things that she said in a book that really resonated with me. And I'd listened to sort of, I'd followed different people on different social media platforms. And I think once I'd made the decision in my head, I am going to give up alcohol, that was the hardest bit. That was the hardest bit to say, this is it. I'm never again going to drink again. You know, once I got that decision made in my head, that was the hardest bit. And because I know so many people give up alcohol on the 31st of December or say the 1st of January. So I knew, you know, after 2 weeks, generally a lot of people fail in that kind of thing. But because I've made the decision that I was not going to drink alcohol again, and not just I'm going to give it up for Dry January, that was the hardest bit.
We're Sound Rebel,
and we just wanted to let you know a bit more about us.
Sound Ribble produced this podcast, and we work with all sorts of personalities to help them engage with their current audiences.
We work with actors, football commentators, comedians, personal trainers, radio presenters, hello, influencers, and even world record holders.
So, if you've got an audience but don't have a podcast, get in touch with us.
Oh, and tell us you heard this ad and we'll produce your first episode for free.
Email hello@soundrebel.co.uk now and take your place in the fastest growing broadcast medium in the world.
Right, back to the episode.
We are taking a quick break from this episode. Hope you are enjoying it as much as we are. Freddie and Ben, there's something I want to raise with you that is quite important.
I'd say we haven't had a break in the episode for a while, so it must be important.
Uh-oh.
It's really important.
My immediate thought is, what have I done wrong?
Well, where to start? I mean, where to start? But we've only got a couple of minutes.
A very, very long list of sins. I wouldn't have it any other way.
The main reason we want to have a little break in a chat is just to say, how good is the Over the Influence community? Hello.
Oh, it's an ad break.
Hello.
It's an ad break.
Here we go. You slipped it in there.
I thought we were going to get some great content. It's a bloody host red ad, as they say in podcast land. It's
welcome
a host red
to
ad.
Over the Influence. If you'd like more information about our community, head to overtheinfluence.co.uk. There's a car park at the rear.
That is not your advert voice, is it? You don't do advert voiceovers,
I've
do you?
I've never done adverts, ever.
You know what? I used to do adverts. I used to do... the brand new Vauxhall Corsa, only $9,995. I did.
I don't know. There's Ben with his car and Shazza parking it in the rear and all these sorts of things and all these stories from Radioland.
That line, there's a car park at the rear. When I used to work in commercial radio, there was a place in Preston called Stewart's Leathers. Find us on Friargate. There's a car park at the rear. And it just sticks in my head.
Are they still
well,
there?
They're the influence. There's no car park in the rear. We go right in the front entrance because I'm loving our community. There's no sneaking around the back here. You dive in the front and you have a great time. And that's why I love the Over the Influence community. I mean, it's been, what, 3 months now since we launched it. I've been blown away. Like, it's very rare that I'm dumbfounded and lost for words, but I really am. The connection, the fun that is happening in there, like it is, you know, it really is a sober social network. And it's, and I'm not going to get all kind of big tech and everything, but the fact it's not on Facebook, and we're allowed to say this here because this is our bloody podcast, the fact that people can get together. And when Facebook and Instagram went down the other day, on our, you know, on the social network, people were loving it because they were like, we're still here. We can still talk about sobriety. We can still help each other. We can still motivate and support each other because we're not on Facebook. And that's one of the things that I love about it. And you've got the community. You've got the secret premium pod that we love recording every week, which is an extra half hour, 40 minutes of madness from Over the Influence. Yeah, and then we've got the events and the masterclass with people like Claire Pooley and
these
world-class experts just coming in and talking to our members.
You know,
it's
who's
amazing.
Coming up next, by the way? Sorry.
Who's coming up next? I should probably know this.
I know this because, in fact, Freddie, you don't even need to know.
Look at my dreamy eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got
it's
a
William
dreamy.
Porter. Yeah.
He's a dreamboat and he's alcohol-free.
Oh, it must be William Porter then.
William Porter, yeah.
Obviously.
William Porter. Why am I singing?
So it's a very intimate, a very, very intimate in Shazza's case, a chat with William Porter just for the members. You know, that's what we do. We bring in these high-performing, world-class experts, and that might be experts in sobriety. It might be experts in, you know, in mindset, in performance, in psychology. We bring all these people in. I'm super, super excited. I'm going to give this an early plug. For one of our masterclass people we'll have in a couple of months' time. You know, she's climbed not only Mount Everest, she's climbed the highest mountain in every continent on the planet. And then, wow, for a bit extra, she walked to the North Pole. And then for a bit of a laugh, she walked to the South Pole. And she's a truly inspiring woman. And she does so much now. She's one of the leading thinkers in and high performance in mental health and helping anyone to achieve any goal they want. It doesn't have to be climbing a mountain. It's any goal you want to achieve. And we get these, we somehow manage to get these amazing, wonderful, knowledgeable people, and we bring them into the community to have a chat, to help people, to give tactics, advice, to help all of our members to achieve their goals. And it's so, so awesome. This is a movement. This is the rebellion. This is where people come to make a difference and matter. And I'm so, so blown away by it every single day. I think what I'm really saying is that it's probably quite good.
You know what I love about it, apart from everything, is that it's a laugh. It's a really fun place to be. It's great. There's nobody going, oh, life shit, and I've given up this and I've given up that. It's like, look what I've gained. Let's have a laugh. Oh my God, what you went out and partied sober. Tell me more about it. Sober dancing. Yes, first up. And it is just, it's just a really nice, friendly, bloody positive, alcohol-free place.
Mm-hmm. It's all interactive as well. Like interacting with each other. But like, you know, we're saying about William Porter and this lady sounds amazing, also slightly unhinged, who's done these amazing things.
Frightening.
You can literally speak to her and ask her your questions directly. You know, it's that's what it's all about. It's awesome. It's only... It's only the world's best alcohol-free community. Join us at avetheinfluence.co.uk.
It's like you're in the BBC World Service or something. Car park in the rear. Well, I'm not going to say what I was going to say about car parks in the rear. Will say is it's a family show, even though it's definitely not. What I was going to say, though, and what I love about the community, you know, it's not full of a bunch of perfect people always saying like, oh, that's an alcohol-free life, brilliant, and I'm so perfect, and oh, high five me. Some people do bring their tough days and their struggles, or, you know, if they've, you know, had a drink for whatever reason. But what I love about it so much is that in those more negative and those darker times, everyone just rallies round and picks that person up and gets them back on their feet again. And there's none of this, some of these communities can be a little bit, morbid and doom and gloom.
No
and,
judgment. There's zero judgment, is there?
Zero judgment, all support, all fun, all laughter. And that's what I love about it. The fact that none of us take ourselves too seriously. It doesn't matter whether you're on day one again, day 1,000. We've got someone in there who's over 7 years alcohol-free. We've got someone else who's 7 hours alcohol-free. It's just, it's like the best sober party that you could ever think about in your very own community that isn't on Facebook. And yeah, it's just awesome.
It is. And, you know, going back to our adverts and our radio analogy, I just like to say that it's all killer and absolutely no filler.
Why not try OTI?
Oh, my God. I'll tell you why you should bloody try OTI, because I haven't talked about this for a while. Let's bring back Naked Calendar Chat, because we haven't talked about this for a couple of weeks. No, 1,000 nice members. We're almost there, guys. No, we're getting close nice every day. Back. We're growing every day. Once we hit 1,000 members, the Naked Calendar is happening. William Porter's involved, doesn't know about it yet. All these people are involved. We're going to get our kit off for the Naked Calendar. All the money is going to go to alcohol support charities, so you can help make that happen. Once we hit 1,000 members, when it happens, the Naked Calendar, very tasteful, very high quality, Shaz are baking her buns, me and Ben playing Twister, all these things, it's going to be amazing. We're going to raise so much money for charity. I can't wait to get oiled up, naked. Ben, red hand, pink, no, right, left hand, red.
Can you come in as a producer, please, and stop this?
Yeah. This is going to be brilliant.
Sorry, guys. Just to remind you, our guest today is a detective in the police force. Like, come on.
This is going to be so good. It's not even legal. Like, put the handcuffs on me, Ben. That could be another picture in the calendar, actually. Handcuffs and truncheon, naked. And anyway, 1,000 members. It's happening. It's been decided. The whole world can't wait. So you, dear listener, can do your part. It's like, what, like 70p a day? It's ridiculous the amount that you get for 70p a day. And Look, just come on board. You're going to love it. Let's make it happen. And then we're going to get a naked calendar.
This is the worst advert break I've ever heard. And we are never doing this
it's
again.
Shocking.
Yeah. Sorry.
Park up in the rear and get involved.
Sorry. I don't know what
to
say.
Why not try ODI?
That's brilliant, actually. I really like
it. No, come on.
I love it.
Back to the episode.
So, Irene, tell us more about the process of writing and how it helped you and... basically, what was it all about?
So the writing started, obviously, after Dusty. I started writing three things I was grateful for each day because I thought I can't go under. So I need, Ted is 14-month-old baby. He's doing lots of great things each day and he doesn't know what's just gone on. So I need to sort of sort myself out for Ted. So I started writing three things that I were grateful for, and they could have been something minute like Ted ate steamed carrots or I didn't cry today. They could have been big things or small things. And I realised that I enjoyed the writing and I did a couple of blogs, and we called them the Stinky Stories. And I was rubbish at English at school. I never particularly read any books, you know. So it was never a thing of mine. It was never... in my head, but once I started, I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed making people laugh. I like to make people laugh. I laugh at my own jokes more than anybody else, really. But
tragic, Irene, tragic. Me and you both, by the way.
So then, once I'd given up drinking, and I had the surgery in the March. I knew I was going to have 6 months off work, and I thought, right, okay, if ever I was going to write a book, now is the time, because I'll never have 6 months off work again. So I just thought, right, I'll crack on. And whilst I was writing my book, there was a thing that I worked out, and there's 168 hours, and you work 40 hours, say, of those a week, and you sleep 56 a week, at least 72 hours. Now, there was a massive portion of that 72 hours that was taken up with drinking wine, because when the lads were in bed, I would open a bottle of wine, and that would be it for the night. There wouldn't be anything productive done. I would be watching TV and drinking wine. And I thought, right, I've got these 72 hours. I need to do something productive in these 72 hours. I know it's not like your full 72 hours, but I thought, right, okay, I'm going to write a book. And that's what I did. I wrote the book before I went back to work. And self-published it.
I'm loving the breakdown here. I can see Ben taking notes. Ben loves a sum.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you? I mean, look at his face.
Yeah.
He enjoyed that a lot.
The maths is good, yeah. If you could bring a kind of pie chart next time. Yeah. You know what? I'm looking down here at some of the reviews on your website, because the book is Look for the Effing Rainbows, a self-help guide, brackets, not really. But which is a great title. If there was a curriculum for parents, this would be on it. Wignall doesn't pretend to have all the... I love it when people do that, by the way, when they next say Irene, they go, Wignall has all the answers.
Yeah.
For the trials of family life, especially during a pandemic.
I love the books. The reviews are all amazing, and everyone should buy this book, definitely. But what I love about it most of all is it's so refreshing, because there is... that whole culture out there of mums and drinking, and, you know, like, mummy, you know, when the kids are whining, mummy needs wine, and gin is mummy's little helper, and all these things. I know Chaz is brilliant at the phrases. And
I hate it. I hate it. It gets me so angry. And I can say that because I was there. I'm not being a judgmental prick. That was me. You know, back in the day, and it just grinds my gears now. Sorry, Irene.
Yeah, and it justifies it. It justifies it. When you see a post like that and you see a meme like that saying it's wine o'clock for mummy and mummy needs wine, you think, oh, well, it's all right then. Everybody else is doing it. It's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Completely.
So I think parenting is tough, and especially, and parenting's tough enough as it is, but then especially when you have... you know, the experiences that you've been through, it must have been so tempting at times, as you say, to say, I'm having a tough time at the moment. I'm going to have the four glasses of wine. But I think what what you show, Irene, is that there is another way. And what would you say to any parents out there that are potentially struggling with something at home, or maybe even just having a day when the kids are just being a bloody nightmare? And did I say that as I'm here trying to record a podcast and I could hear my 7-year-old playing basketball outside now, as you can probably hear. So what advice would you give to parents who are thinking, I'm having a tough time right now, I really want that gin or that glass of wine?
Yeah, well, I liken parenthood. When I first had Ted, I felt like somebody had hit me around the head with a cricket bat, and that's what the sort of shock I was in. But I do think, like, obviously we all love our children dearly, but it is hard work. And just to sort of take yourself out of that situation, pick your battles. You do not have to fight every morning about, the you know, something minute, like whether he's eating his full piece of toast, or, you know, pick your battles, definitely. And you need time for yourself. You definitely need time for yourself. Nobody's going to give you a pat on the back because you spend 24/7 with your child. Your child's not going to benefit from it, and you're not going to benefit from it, definitely. And I think to take yourself out, even if it is just a walk or the gym, but to take yourself out of the situation benefits everybody. So it doesn't have to be a bottle of wine or a glass of wine, because I do think, and I can say this now, but it exaggerates the problem the next day. You've got less patience, and you're in that vicious cycle then. So it is, I definitely think you need time for yourself as well.
Irene, did you find when you removed booze as a mum that this weird thing called patience happened and being calm? Because I think back to 3 years plus ago, and, you know, the family kitchen on a weekday morning trying to get everybody out, shrieking and screaming and ratty. And I'm not about the kids. This was me. And then removed booze, and I was like, come on, darlings, there's some muesli on the side there. Just help yourselves. Take your time. Brush your teeth in your own time. It's not a problem. I'll lead you through the door by the hand. And I'm like, who even am I? And this, I do exaggerate a tad, but I didn't know that you could be calm as a parent, that you could be patient as a parent. And it was like this whole new life. Far from perfect, Irene, don't get me wrong, but it changes and it makes parenting easier and a damn sight nicer for the kids.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think I used to sort of be up here for every single question that they asked me. I was up here for every single time they ignored me. I was up here, but you know, now if they ignore me and it's not even a big deal, then I let it go, you know, because life is too short, and they're not gonna end up in prison because they've ignored me about putting the shoes on 3 times, you know.
Well, I don't know. You ever use that, by the way, with the children? Do you know what mommy does for a job?
Well, that's why, because we both do it as well, that's why I think if ever kids are going to go off the rails, it's these two.
One thing, I know we're probably digressing now, but do you, because we're all, I think we're fascinated by your career as well, can you spot when your kids are lying or when people are lying really easily?
I can spot when my husband's lying because his nostrils flare out. Oh,
no. But now, husband, cover your noses, everybody, cover your noses.
I know. I've discovered that. So Ted is 9 now, and when he tells me a lie and he turns and I can see his nostrils going, and I think, oh, poor thing, he's got his dad's trait.
And I was going to say, how has your husband taken the, when you changed your drinking habits? Was he supportive from the start? Did he believe that you were going to do it? How did it all work from a relationship perspective?
It's funny because it's only sort of in the past 12 months that we've discussed how bad I was. You know, if we went out on a night out, he generally didn't drink a lot, but then he'd go out with his friends. You know, he goes to festivals and stuff. He'd go out with his friends and have a drink at the festival. And it really used to bug me because I'd be like, you can get drunk with your friends, but why can you not get drunk with me? And he said, and this was only recently, because I always had to look after you. I knew you were going to get drunk, so I had to look after you. And I never thought about that when I was drinking. So we're definitely a lot more relaxed. There's no sort of, oh God, she's opened a bottle of wine. Because I would sort of, on my third glass, I'd be like, remember when you loaded the dishwasher yesterday? It was totally wrong. Everything would come up on that third glass of wine. But yeah, because he never said anything to me. He never said, maybe you should stop drinking. And I think he probably knew that if he had done, we probably wouldn't be together, even though I knew he would have been right. But yeah, it's definitely changed our relationship, and we are a lot more relaxed, and there's no issues, there's no anxiousness, you know, when we go out on a night out. It's far more relaxed.
It's been a real pleasure to chat, and for somebody to say you've been through it is an understatement over the years, with your own health and with the loss that you've experienced, and yet here you are almost 3 years alcohol free. Are you still looking for the effing rainbows, Irene?
Every day.
It's amazing. And of course you have written books and you blog, and you've just got a really, really lovely positive story to tell. If anybody wants to follow you or buy your books or read more about you, where can they find out all the info, Irene?
I've got a website, lookforrainbows.com, and I'm on Instagram, Irene Wignall and the Stinks. I'm on all social media, so yeah, I'd be happy to connect with anybody.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much. I've really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you for having me. I've loved chatting to you all.
Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you. Meet Steve.
It's Steve here, now 619 days sober. I didn't really have access to a sober community in Newcastle. I did attend some little group things, but they weren't really for me. I was too anxious. There was no real structure to it. It was all messy. So being able to just listen into the podcast and feel like you're in a discussion with like-minded people, that really helped me early days when I was struggling with anxiety still. It's also helped, it's given me access to associate with people who I wouldn't come across in my day-to-day life, or I wouldn't think that they would have trouble with alcohol. But yeah, it's been great and it's been amazing, and I hope you keep up the good work. Thank you very much for what you've done for me so far.
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk and be part of the Sober Rebellion.